Broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Well, hello everyone. A very good morning to you all and welcome to today's webinar. It's actually our final webinar for 2021. My name is David Shannon and I'm the coordinator of our webinar program here at Praemium. I'm really only here to keep an eye on GoToWebinar and to push a couple of buttons, so let me waste no time this morning by introducing our key speaker for today. Martin Morris is our Chief Distribution Officer here at Praemium. Good morning, Martin.
Good morning, David.
Before we get started, let me remind you all that you are on mute. We do encourage your questions. We hope it can be an interactive session, so please feel free to use the questions function on your GoTo dashboard. I'll be keeping an eye on those questions you're posting and I'll send them over to Martin or read them out for him so that he can address them. There will be some time at the end of the presentation as well where we can share them. But that will be enough for me. I'm going to hand over directly to Martin to get us started.
Thanks, David, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to this morning's session. Today's session, as you know, is the emerging high net worth investor and what their key advice requirements are. It's a very exciting segment of the high net worth environment, and I hope that we can do that justice for you this morning. Excuse me, while my screen has frozen, so if you give me 2 seconds while it all David, are you having problems at your end?
No, Martin. I think, do you want to maybe try starting your PowerPoint again, your presentation again? That looks good.
There we go.
All good. Thank you.
Sorry about that, everybody. Thanks for bearing with us. So there is no advice today. This is obviously just going through the research, but obviously we have to disclaim that there is no personal advice attached. The agenda today, I do encourage questions, so please send them through to David and we'll stop and I'll answer them as much as I can. And if we can't get to the answer because they're part deeply in the research and I don't know the answer, we will get those answers to you at a later date. But we're going to look at the emerging high net worth investor and why they're important. We'll then look at their unmet advice needs, and in particular, looking at things like intergenerational wealth transfer, ESG, and their overall digital experience. So first off, I think I just wanted to take you through the market as we see it at the moment and how big it is, and then why this sector is quite significant. So if you look on the left-hand side of the screen, this is the full advice market. So on the right-hand side, sorry, you've got the traditional platform market, just short of a trillion. We play in that space, as everyone knows, and in particular in the managed account space, where we take about 15% market share currently. On the left-hand side, you've got this private wealth market. Again, we traditionally play a strong part in that. It's currently registered about 2.77 trillion. It's just over 600 billion in terms of actual advised component of the market. So we serve about 9% of the complete market, but actually nearly 25% of the advised component of this market. But what's interesting is this high net worth and the ultra high net worth space has always been or is considered to be a sector looked after by the private wealth advisory network. And I think one of the most surprising things that this research shows is that the emerging high net worth sector do not necessarily put a private wealth advisor in the forefront of their thought process when they're thinking about advice. So there's a little bit of a challenge there to existing private wealth advisory firms as to how do you adapt and create an environment that is attractive to the up and coming emerging high net wealth investor, but also for those of you that are looking to move into this sector or want to increase their market share in the high net worth sector, there is a major opportunity because what we'll show through this process is financial planners figure very highly in the thought process of where advice may be taken. What's really important in this research, and I encourage you to to consider is the difference between a traditional holistic business model for a traditional mum and dad investor compared to a high net worth investor and what their needs are, because there is some significant difference which we'll try and bring out to you today in this presentation. Interestingly, though, both of those sectors have very converging needs. So you've got intergenerational wealth transfer, total wealth reporting view, and even at a family level, looking at whole of wealth. And then you've got things like the advent of managed portfolios, which has become very attractive to both sectors. So we are focusing on this, the emerging high net worth and the importance of this sector and attractiveness to private wealth firms for new clients and also for traditional IFAs that are looking to increase their market share. Now, we commissioned this research with Investment Trends. They've done this previously. It's about the 14th time that they've actually run this survey. And the invitations that Investment Trends do is they send it to an opt-in panel of investors, and then there are institutional clients and product providers, online brokers that they get information from. But if you look at the sample size, it's quite significant. There was, 2,275 high net worth investors have contributed to this survey, and they must have at least $1 million in investable assets, and that is net wealth that is clear of debt and excludes home, business, and super. But they do include self-managed super funds because that's deemed to be a controllable asset. What this survey did, though, and the wider survey, is it looked at all high net worth and ultra high net worth. But what we're looking at today is this emerging high net worth investor segment. It's the 1 million to 2.5 million in investable assets. And I just wanted to really frame your thought process. We sat through the Investment Trends did a presentation yesterday on the wider research. But what's really interesting when you watch those types of presentations or these types of presentations where there's a lot of data is how you approach the data. And what we've done is we've put together a presentation, and then I've added some considerations and thought processes for you. Because as you sit through this presentation, you'll see data points. You've got a choice in terms of how you look at those data points. They're either interesting to you. Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't realize that. And you can get to the end of the presentation. You've listened very, and you think, that's really interesting. I don't know what to do with that. What I'd encourage you to do, though, is have a pen and paper and think inquisitively about this data. This is a significantly growing component of the market, this emerging high net worth. But their needs are different. They're very, very specific. And what we need to be doing is sit and say, that's interesting, but inquisitively, how do I maximize my opportunity here? How do I minimize my risk? How do I adapt my business? And start to think the process through as you're hearing the data, because you're going to get the best out of it today. So when we look at the presentation, the first thing we need to do is, who are the emerging high net worth investors? And what we've talked about is, or how big is it? This is the fastest growing investor segment. So 1 to 2.5 million. There are 124,000 emerging high net worth investors in 2021. If you look at the growth from 2017 on this slide on the left-hand side through to 2020, it was fairly static, but we've seen significant growth, both in asset prices, property pricing, and this emerging market is growing significantly. Their average investable assets is 1.6 million, and we've seen their total wealth of this pool grow by 60%. That is huge growth, and it's a huge opportunity. What it also is, though, is that it's a risk to our business if we're not adapting to this. Are some of these emerging high net worth clients actually, or investors, are clients already, and their wealth that we don't see has grown beyond where we believe it's at? If we're a private wealth firm and we're looking at this opportunity, we've got to be saying, what is it about our business model that we can access this market, or where's the risk of this market if there are other avenues they're going to advice first, they're going to get to them before we do. But it's a very interesting segment in terms of the growth and having a look at that market. Now, who is the emerging high net worth market? So the first demographic profile is, it's about 80% male, 20% female. Average age is about 61. Average, well, I just wanted to raise this actually. The highest representation in this group is 30 to 50 year olds. They're less likely to be business owners and C-suite executives. And that's why that $140,000 annual household income is important, because they're more likely to be in full-time employment rather than business owners. And it's a different profile. You've also got this higher representation in the 30 to 50 year olds means that we're at the higher end of millennials. So halfway about 40 year old, but the oldest millennial now is about 40, which is in this highest representation category, really in the middle of that opportunity. So whilst this, the average age of this group of emerging high net worths is 61, the highest representation is 30 to 50 year olds. And the younger they are, the different their expectations are going to be in terms of the service model that you've got. Obviously, in order to be high net worth, there are things that we're seeing, which is things like 68% of home outright ownership, and just significant, as we mentioned, is the significant growth. But with an average salary of around 140, they're probably not who you thought of you would be looking at for high net worths. It's a really interesting thing to consider when you're what you were previously targeting for high net worth and whether or not actually there's a different way to go about it. Now, what we've got to look next at is we understand this pool of clients. We can see that there is an attractive opportunity in front of us. What is it we need to do? And the next part that the research looked at was what were the advice needs for these clients? And what the question, this question was, which of the statements do you agree with in relation to financial advisors and your attitude? So if you have a look at this, the top 13% are delegators. Would you use advisors not making investment decisions? And would you use advisors even as in a second opinion? These are delegators. 13% of these are delegators. You then have 52% of this segment are validators. Would use advisors for access to a wider range of investments and would use advisors for tech skills and investment guidance. And only 33% are self-directed. What this is starting to show, though, if you think about those statistics, is that 13% would be your traditional financial planning model, which is the holistic, I'll give you all of my wealth, I need you to give me advice. What we're seeing, though, is those that would go to a financial advisor that are validators are 52% of those. You need to really consider, what are they asking for? My existing advice model looks like X, but these are validators. They're going to come to you for something slightly different. And what you'll see through the presentation and some of this research is their needs are different. They've got a much more transactional nature. You've got an opportunity to make them delegators. But the first thing you have to do is consider how you can tap into the validators. This is where you're starting your brand. And you may find that the delegators, the 13%, the reason that figure is 13%, they may already have an advisor and therefore they're used to that process already. But this 52% of validators that are new to wealth have probably never been to an advisor. These are the sector you've got to think really, really strongly about your business model and how you access them. What we were then, the survey looked at is, if you used an advisor used in the last 12 months, who was used? And as you can see, the two largest segments is the accountant and the financial advisor. And what's very interesting in this is this emerging segment of high net worths is there's a significant difference between going to see a private wealth advisor and financial advisor. Again, I'll say that's a risk for private wealth advisors that they've got this new emerging sector and segment that is likely to go to a financial and advisor before them. And it's an opportunity that we know as an accountant or financial advisor, they're going to come to us first. They've got a higher propensity to come to us for advice. So it's an opportunity and a risk for advisors dependent on your profile. And when you look at the unmet advice needs of this pool, they're very interesting. And as you can see down the left-hand side, these are all their unmet advice needs. And the top are fairly similar in importance to this group. And the top five are listed there, and you can see them in the graph listed from one to five. But the first one is inheritance and estate planning. These individuals are new emerging high net worths, and one of their immediate needs is inheritance and estate planning, which makes sense because they didn't have it yesterday. They've all of a sudden found wealth. They all of a sudden have estate planning needs. We would think as a traditional planner, you now have X amount of dollars, you must need investment advice. When investment and strategy portfolio review is actually fourth on their list. Their first thing is inheritance and estate planning. They also then start to think, wow, I've got a big tax bill. I've got a big issue here that I never used to really think about, which is I've now got such significant wealth, my tax bill has risen exponentially. So the first two have nothing to do per se, which of course they do, but with portfolio construction, with investment strategy advice. These are about holistic advice of giving inheritance and estate planning and minimize tax. And the third one is income, generating income. Only then will we look at, well, what does the portfolio and the investment strategy, and then protecting the assets and income against market fall. So I'll just go back a slide, sorry. So I just want to reiterate what I said earlier, which is that's quite fundamentally different, unless you're an estate planning specialist, as to how we would view a younger pool, particularly that 30 to 50 year olds coming to us. You probably wouldn't be thinking of inheritance and estate planning as their immediate need. You'd have a preconception when they come to you as to the advice you're going to give. And what we've got to be careful of is that we're not assuming what they're coming to us for. When we're promoting our services, if we're promoting our portfolio construction IP, is that what this pool of clients want from you right now? Is that their immediate need? And I think that's a really big challenge for advisors that are trying to break into or grow in this market segment. With those unmet advice needs, what was the question was, who are you most likely to turn to for those unmet advice needs? And again, there's a big pool of unknowns because a lot of them probably have never needed any particular advice, and all, it's grown on them so quickly. But there's a pool of them, the majority of them are going to go to the accountant for tax advice, and that was number two in the unmet advice needs, so that makes sense. But they're going to go next to a financial advisor for advice. And it's not surprising because these individuals probably have never had private wealth advisors tapping them on the shoulder. When they go to their banks in previous years, the bank didn't see them as a high net worth individual. They saw them, they probably saw their salaries in, you know, when you get the information on the CRM in an environment where you've got lending or something. And the banks are not targeting this type, wouldn't have been targeting these clients and getting their private wealth division to talk to them. And equally, they weren't a typical target for the private wealth advisors who, in our experience, target investors over $2 million. Now, as I said, this research did show a whole load of outcomes in exactly like this for unmet advice needs for those in excess of $2.5 million. But actually, this is an untapped market. And at the moment is really the financial advisor is their main focus. So we've got minimal competition for financial advice in this sector and a risk to the private wealth advisors, again, that's where they're looking to go in the first instance. But importantly, with the advice needs, we've got this education and awareness needed. We need to also be educating this new segment as to why they should come to a financial advisor. We need to have awareness as to what their needs are. David, I assume there's been no questions to date, so I'll just keep going. I'm rattling away here and just make sure.
Quickly. Martin, there has been a couple of questions. The first one is around high net worth clients. Do they necessarily have more complex needs than other clients, which I think you've been addressing in the first few slides there?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily more complex needs. I think it's what they expect from their advisor. And I think we'll sort of address this in a little bit, is that they're a little bit more initially transactional in nature. And actually, that's what you find with a lot of ultra high net worth and high net worth clients anyway. They don't always give all their wealth to a single advisor, private wealth advisor, and they have a lot more control, and they'll use their private wealth advisor often as a transaction in a transactional nature. So you've just got to understand, I think, that in this sector, they're not all delegate, only 13% are delegators. So 52% are validators. It's very different than getting a traditional planning client. And I think that's the biggest difference.
We have had the usual couple of questions about whether the presentation will be available after today, and we will be sending out an email to everyone who attended, which will have a link to the recording of this presentation. So yes. Another question, Martin, the unmet advice need of investing for income. One would not immediately think that given the age group, i.e. they're not retirees, is this due to income required for family needs, i.e. private school education for their children?
Yeah, I think that I'm talking from my perspective intuitively. So I was thinking about this, and we'd have to delve deeper in terms of what that regular income would be. But I'd argue that you've got people on 100, say the average salary is 140. Their mindset has been about income for a long time. So, and they've coming to an advisor and saying, how do I create more income? Because it's not necessarily just purely about asset growth. It's how do I turn my assets to give me a little bit more income in order to have a more comfortable lifestyle? And I think, again, yes, you are right. They're looking at this and saying, I've got private school fees. That used to come out of my income. Where's it going to come from now? I now have an opportunity to turn my assets into income so I can do some things I couldn't do previously. Whereas traditionally, your high net worth that's older, it's got a lot of wealth, they're later in life, they've been through their income. It's all about asset protection and asset, possibly asset growth, but particularly asset protection and inheritance tax. Whereas income plays a much bigger part in this segment.
That's it for now, Martin.
Thank you. So we mentioned it, so this is where we got to in the presentation. So as well as why they're going, it's important also to think about, you know, what stops them from seeking advice. And these are the categories down the left-hand side. An interesting one, the number one, prefer to seek advice only when I need it. This is what I was meaning before about changing your thought for practice about how you interact with these clients. Because you are going to, if you want to tap into this market, one of the biggest needs is, I don't want you to do everything. I just want to come and embrace and your knowledge and your IP when I need it. And we did some research when I was at Scandia a long time ago. And one of the things it talked about was the trust cycle of financial planning. And it talked about the trust that the client went through, the trust moments, overlaid by the advice process, the six steps of advice. Now, there was a lot of detail in there, but one of the things that it said at the end of that was that 66% of those in the focus groups that had an advisor that was less than 2 years old would consider another advisor. Now, that was quite a striking figure. And the reason that was because the advisor practice on average was going through a standard process. It was their model. They were doing everything from a practice management perspective they've been taught to do in terms of fact finding and doing everything as efficiently as possible, as quickly as possible. But what was not addressed was the actual advice needs. And what that research showed was that by the time the client came out the end of it, they never really got 100% of what they needed. They had to compromise and receive what the advisor wanted. And That's a reality when someone doesn't have a large balance. But in this instance, we're talking about much larger balances of people who want to control more of their wealth. So we've really got to consider that when we're talking to this high net worth sector, what are their needs? The next bit was I can manage my own financial affairs. Well, we talked about that segment of groups that want to do it themselves. But there are other things in here that I think are important to look at. And one is the value proposition and the advice needs. Prefer to seek advice when I need it, or I can manage my own affairs. Difficult to find advisors to help with all my needs. Well, that's quite interesting, is that what are all their needs? And I think that's the investigation we've got to look into. You've then got these other components, which is the advisor costs too much and unknown, unclear costs. Well, advisors, it makes sense if they prefer to seek advice only when I need it and advisors cost too much, is possibly because they've seen the cost the advisors are charging based on whole of wealth management. Now, of course, even with this sector, we want to get to that point, but you have to build trust in stages. And if they prefer to seek advice only when I need it, well, maybe the cost of delivering holistic advice is scaring them off. And maybe it's also the way you articulate value versus cost needs to change. And if there's unknown, unclear costs, that just comes down to how you articulate and represent what it is you do for this sector. And I'd say that if you had a website and information that talked about the standard approach to financial planning, and we do superannuation and we do this, and it doesn't consider how to articulate that to a higher net worth client, you're going to struggle to be able to get them to understand the cost versus value. So it really does require you to think about your messaging to clients. And then there's, I mentioned just before, the trust perception. There's 20% have trust, the lack of trust. Now that's not a surprise, really. Worth who have a large lack of trust in getting advice or seeking advice. And business isn't easy, of course, but in this sector, again, it's just about readjusting how we think about these sectors. Now, when you are focusing on what clients value, for those of you who are premium clients of old, will have seen this client engagement iceberg, which is something I trot out on a regular basis. And that is understanding what clients value versus what clients don't value, but the advisor has to achieve. And clients only value what they see on top of the iceberg. They don't value what's underwater. Now, what you've got to do in your advice practice is think of the different segments of your clients and actually have your own client engagement iceberg for the different segments. And if this is a new segment for you, you may find that the client engagement iceberg for this segment is different to what you've been doing in the past. Now, it might not be, but there are specifically different needs. And as I mentioned, that the support the advice needs, the main ones these guys want, this sector wants, is inheritance tax planning, tax minimization strategies, and income and asset protection, which may be slightly different than just thinking about superannuation as the main part of your client or self-managed super funds. If your practice is already focusing in these areas as a specialization, then you are really well placed for this segment. But if inheritance planning is not a major focus on any of your literature, website, or the way you interact with your clients, you're going to struggle to pick their very first number one need. And I'll talk to you a little bit about intergenerational wealth in a moment, which talk about why this is important and how important to the general consumer inheritance tax planning actually is. They want education on ESG. The research has shown that they want this single view of portfolio with total wealth, which I'll talk about in a moment, and a digital client experience. But really important is they're going to have value matching cost. They have very different servicing needs, and I've said it on a number of occasions through the presentation, I can't iterate it enough, is that dealing with this sector is very, very different. And you've just got to make sure it does. I don't mean that the advice necessarily is inheritance tax planning is different. It's the way you approach your value proposition as to what you do for these clients and how you articulate it. Now, if we think about intergenerational wealth first, and I think everybody has heard about intergenerational wealth transfer and the opportunity, but of this sector in this increasing, about 63% either have received or expect to receive an inheritance. So it's a very large portion that are going to get a lump of money that's going to change their world, it's going to change their asset base, and it's going to change their self-worth. So it's a large thing we've got to consider. And when you think about that, you've got to then think, well, there's a risk here. Because of those benefactors that are going to get this inheritance, what is their intention of retaining their existing advisors? And of the 1 to 2.5 million, only 8% said they would continue using the existing advisor of their parents. 48% said they're going to manage the inheritance on themselves, which they may do. No, probably won't do it very well, but they will do it. And there's a 20% unknown. What that means is 92% do not expect to keep the existing advisor. So that is one of two things. That is a massive risk to anybody who has an aging client base. If you haven't got a business model that is geared up towards offering solutions to this emerging high net worth, and particularly this sector that's the 30 to 50 year olds, which have very different needs to your traditional retiree. But 48% believing they can do it themselves, you will lose 48% of clients of that wealth. It will leave your business. But only 24% actually have their own advisor. So it's a risk, but it's a massive opportunity, because if they're leaving, where are they going? And of course, 48% are saying they're not going anywhere. But there's still 28%. 92% that are open for a discussion. They are open for ensuring that also, if I'm going to use my own advisor, does that advisor know how to look after this emerging high net worth market? Their advisor might be right for them today, but we've done plenty of presentations about how do you grow your business in conjunction with how your clients are changing. And what often does happen, and I've seen this through the time I spent at a licensee and through my consulting, is a business model does not adapt with their clients. So if you had a certain business model, you've grown in age with your clients, but the newer clients coming through have to adapt your model. What we're not seeing is enough thought process around the, you know, sort of platform of everything idea, which is different segments of your clients, the longer you've been in business, are going to have different needs. You need to be able to find a technology way to do that in a scalable manner. But there are different needs and there are different things they need from you as an advisor in terms of the client engagement model. So there is a huge opportunity if we can get it right. But this is also the startling intergenerational wealth transfer inheritance and why inheritance is so important statistic that came out of the research. And what this is questioning, of your wealth, approximately what percentage do you expect to leave as an inheritance? On the right-hand side is the biggest bars, and it's all 100%. Now, obviously, the biggest pool there is 10 to 70 million, and then it goes down. But even the 1 to 2.5 million, over 30% believe that they will be leaving 100% of their assets to their clients, to their children. But even if you come down to the 50 to 75% or 26 to 50%, there's a strong belief that this pool of clients, they've become an emerging high net worth. They've made wealth overnight. Well, not overnight. They've incrementally made wealth, but we've kickstarted the amount of them that there are. And a very large portion of them believe they're going to give a fairly significant amount of their wealth away, which is not a surprise when you think about their biggest advice need is inheritance. 2 years ago, this pool of clients did not believe they had an inheritance tax problem, probably. They've now become a millionaire in the last 12 months, this new 124,000 people, they've moved away from asset growth to inheritance tax planning, tax planning, and how do I get a bit more income to make my life more comfortable from my assets? So it's a really interesting dynamic that I think the research is showing for you. And of course, who would they turn to get intergenerational wealth planning advice? Once again, financial advisor is the number one place they're going to go to. So financial planners are in a great place to deliver and capture these clients, deliver advice and opportunity and capture these clients. But it is an opportunity, but equally, as I said, it is a risk, because as a financial planner who maybe have an older client base, it's a massive risk to your business if you aren't able to adapt to talk to this type of client base. The other thing that's very interesting that came out of the research is responsible investing, and that's not really a surprise. We did a ESG presentation after a white paper that I wrote for Financial Standard. That was presented at Financial Standard conference last week to some great accolades by Andrew, our region manager in Sydney. And some of the stats that came out of that is that, you know, by the end of 2021, Bloomberg say that this sector is going to be $53 trillion. And in fact, all of ETF asset growth, 13% of all ETF asset growth is into this sector. And what's really important is that if you've got these newly emerging high net worths, what's their influence on this ESG sector? How much do I need to take into account when I'm considering this sector? And if you have a look at this slide, what it's saying is the importance placed on responsible investing by them. So extremely important 12, very important 17, and important 25. So only 30% thought it was somewhat important, and literally only 18% said it wasn't important at all. So there's a very high level of importance, but actually when you looked at how well do you understand ESG, only 2% said they were expert, 34% said it was good, and average said it was 36. But there's limited or no understanding for about 24% of the sector. So 82% state it's important to some degree, and 54% say it's important or extremely important, and 28% have limited understanding, with 64% having average to no understanding. So we've got a dichotomy here and a really good opportunity, and that is we have a sector that believes it's very important to them to invest responsibly. A great opportunity for the financial planning community, and one that will be legislated in the future anyway, but is really important to this sector, is how well they understand. You've got a great educational opportunity. So as well as that inheritance tax and the tax and the income, the other thing that's very important to this sector is this ESG. And the question would be, how does your practice currently interact in an ESG sense? How does it give advice in this sector? And what would it do to somebody who yesterday was not a millionaire and has got additional wealth and is now thinking, actually, I better do something worthwhile with my money? How will you address that in your practice if you're not already addressing ESG as an advice component? People are generally addressing it. I'm talking about the opportunity, the business opportunity of addressing it in a bit more sense. And what the research went a little bit deeper in was looking at the corporate governance, looking at the various types of responsible investing. And as you can see on the bottom there, corporate governance, environmental issues, ethical issues, social issues, Indigenous. What that meant was, what was important to extremely important to this sector of clients? 76% felt corporate governance was important. And as you can see, it actually slows down, unfortunately, the worst result there. I'm not saying that's a great indictment of this pool of clients, but Indigenous issues were the lowest at 41, but it was still 41% is important. But again, what this is showing you is that you need to understand this client base as to what is important to them. So ESG is important, but what part of ESG is important? And there's a significant difference between corporate governance to the next one, which is environmental, and then environmental, ethical, and social, all around 50% importance to extremely important, and then Indigenous issues are next. But it's this type of detail that enable you to articulate well to your clients. What the research then looked at was their digital experience and consolidated reporting and the importance of wealth that's managed and accessed via a digital experience. And the reality of this is that 59% believe it's somewhat or extremely important to have a single digital experience, and 40% believed it was important to extremely important. And in terms of not important was 41%. So I think overall, if you look at that as an opportunity, would be, what are you doing if you then end up with a more transactional relationship with your client and you're going to manage a portion of their wealth? How do you deliver whole of wealth reporting for them? What is it you can do in your business that can help them? And I think that's where one of the lures to get more of their wealth or even to report on their wealth for them is that non-custodial asset component. Is you might manage a component, whether it's managed accounts or equities or managed funds or ETFs or whatever you're doing through a traditional platform, and you might be managing their Aussie equity component, who knows. But actually, what technology can you use to encourage them that you can do additional transactional services or even administrative services to give them their whole of wealth experience? Because you're talking about a much greater pool of assets. And where would they get that? So obviously investment platforms in this sector, and they're probably a sector that's more used to investment platforms, is the most popular, followed by just looking at each investment separately. That's how they're currently doing it. And then online broker's website. But there's very low access currently through a financial advisor, which is interesting. Now we've got this opportunity where advisor is the go-to as part of this research for this sector, is where they'd get advice. But actually what we're seeing at the moment is through their financial advisor is not their number one access. And where they're getting this investment platform experience, it would be interesting. I think it's something we've got to dig a bit deeper into and look at. But to have 30% look at investments separately means there's a huge opportunity again to show them how the wealth management industry has created reporting outcomes in order to help this sector. And utilizing your services to give them that whole of wealth experience will be very, very beneficial to this sector. And then what we asked in the survey is, what do you see as the benefits of investment platforms? And I don't think any of these are a real surprise, but the increasing value is important. So you look down the left-hand side, you know, online access, annual tax reporting, they make sense. But what's really important is, what is the increasing value? So time, less paperwork, reporting across all my investments, a wider choice of assets. These are all very much administrative function, and their client experiences rather than necessarily the buying and selling of managed funds. Because if you have a look, the ability to buy and sell managed funds is important, but it isn't one of the most important. So this group of clients have a much greater focus on understanding their assets, being involved in their assets. We've talked about their transactional nature, but this is showing that they want their time back. They've realized that as their wealth has grown, they've got more need for technology, more need for consolidation. And that's really an interesting value proposition when you're talking about what you're selling to them. If you're selling to them purely advice on investments, you're missing some of their intrinsic needs, which are they need more time. They want less paperwork. They want a more single experience across all their investments. They do, of course, want a wider choice of assets, but they want ease of use. And remember what we said, 59% believe it's somewhat to extremely important to have a single view of investments. So it's really important to understand how we're using our tech stack to support this group. And then factors to improve the digital experience, increased focus, these are things that we've been talking about, increased focus on tax, interactive modeling access and automated reporting. These are all the things that they want to see will improve their digital experience. And I think they all ring true with everything we've said about this client base. Remember, you'll get these slides. There's a lot of information we're rushing through, but please remember you get the slides and then we can answer any of your questions later. So just to finish off in my last minute or so, so what's the benefit here? And what I did, I thought I'd just consolidate some of my thoughts and messaging that I've been given. So the opportunities always have a risk. So there's growth opportunities in this service segment. The risk is as clients grow wealthier and source, sorry, the risk is that clients grow wealthier and they source a more suitable service elsewhere if as a practice you haven't developed your model to grow in line with their needs and they're changing psychology of how they want to interact with their portfolio. There's an ability to scale business with higher value clients. But again, a risk is an inability to deliver suitable advice model investment solutions to wealthier clients. We've got to have a different approach. An opportunity is that financial advisors are rated highly, but a risk is only 13% actually source full advice currently. The inability to understand the transactional nature of 50% of this sector may just be a risk to your business because you need clarity around service for this group. The opportunity of significant unmet advice needs is counteracted by a missed opportunity, a lack of awareness of what needs to be targeted. How are you messaging your business to this group of clients? Intergenerational wealth transfer is an opportunity, but as we said, the flip side is 90% of current beneficiaries will leave their parents' advisor. So it's a risk to existing incumbents. It's an opportunity to other advisors, but actually across both sectors, there's still opportunity. And delivering technology benefits to a sector in need. 50% of them said they manage their own portfolios. So 50% have Excel usage. Offering standard retail options to this high net worth client base may actually be a risk and misunderstanding the needs. So that concludes my presentation. And I really hope that you got a lot out of it. Please remember you'll get the slides. Please have a look, have a dig deep, think about it, be inquisitive. And engage us to talk about more. We've got full research. We can't give you the full research, but we have the research. I'm more than happy to come to individual practices and talk about specific things that you want more information on. So thank you for your time. And I really do hope that was of interest.
Martin, before you go, we do have a couple of questions and we do have time to address them. I think we scheduled in an hour for this presentation. I'll just run through a couple of them. Why do you believe there is such a large percentage of high net wealths appear in that grey area whereby they are unsure of who to turn to for advice?
I think 20% of the financial planning community see advisors, so 80% don't. So what we've got is a segment of the community that all of a sudden have become significantly wealthy, but they probably don't have an experience of who to go and talk to. So I think what we're seeing is that if you don't have wealth and you don't consider an advisor something that's of use, then you'll never go and see an advisor. But actually sometimes circumstances change. And in this instance, all of a sudden we've got assets and we've got wealth and we're starting to worry about inheritance tax and income. And all of a sudden there's a need that they've never had before, but they've never been to anyone to talk about it. So they've got to work out who they can go and see and what they need to talk to them about. I think that's the answer.
Just a couple of some clarity around a couple of the terms that you mentioned during the presentation. One is, can you clarify inheritance tax planning?
Yep. Basically, they're looking at what happens if they are transitioning assets to other family members. There's inheritance tax is about the event when an event happens. And you might have families that want to actually pass wealth before they die. Well, if you do that, there's going to be a tax event. So how do you do it in a way that is tax efficient and minimize tax? Because this group of people don't want to lose their wealth as they pass it to their children, if they pass it early, by having a great chunk of it taken from a tax perspective. That would be my understanding of inheritance tax planning.
Yep, that makes sense.
And equally on death. I mean, there are certain events that will incur tax.
And just another one on definitions that we've used during the presentation, Martin. What's the difference between financial advisor and private wealth advisor?
So private wealth advisors are just they would be the private wealth divisions of banks, you know. So from a NABS perspective, you had JB Weir, and there are a lot of broking firms that promote themselves as private wealth. So and you've got, you know, the Morgan Stanley's, Credit Suisse, the UBS's, that they would be classed as private wealth. And because they often don't take clients on with less than $2 million. So they're a segment that market themselves to a larger pool of clients. And we've got, you know, one of our private wealth advisory firms doesn't take a client with less than $5 million. So they would be classified as private wealth. And then financial planners or financial advisors are what you would see in the traditional market, which would be IFAs, and there would be more of them and they'd be more well known. But the average investor would not probably think to go and talk to Credit Suisse or Morgan Stanley. They would see that as a private wealth and I don't have enough wealth to go to them. And probably wouldn't get a service model either at this stage. Though I think that I've spoken to a couple of them and said that this concept of building scalable solutions to emerging high net worths or emerging clients below $2 million is something that they should be considering moving forward because everybody else is targeting that sector.
Yes, makes sense. Makes perfect sense to me. Thank you, Martin. And if you're making sense to me, I'm hoping that anyone can understand it.
Fantastic.
We also have had a few comments along the lines of great insights and would love to talk to you about some of this stuff, which is fantastic. We would love to get in touch with you guys. And as Martin mentioned, hopefully you know our phone number, our email address. You can get in touch with us or your BDM. We also have some...
And you can... Sorry, David, anybody's... I'm also willing... because I'll get the BDM involved as well. But come to me direct if you'd like to have a chat. My email address is martin.morris@premium.com. Happy to have a chat to you about this and sort of similar information that can help you. And we can then sort of engage with the business development team to help you.
Yeah, it's terrific to see such interest in what was some really fascinating research. There are a couple of ebooks available from our website as well. So I encourage you to jump on the website and download a copy of those ebooks because we do go into some of the more interesting points that came out of the research. But we might start to wrap it up. So thanks everyone for your attendance. Appreciate that we're getting really close to the holiday time of the year and that everyone's really busy. We've come out of lockdown where we've got a lot of clients to catch up with and work to do. But the number of people that attended this session, obviously there's a lot of interest in it. So we hope you found the session useful. As we've mentioned, if it does trigger any questions, there will be a follow-up, couple of questions when we end the session. So encourage you to complete those short feedback survey. There's really only two questions, and we do really value your feedback to make sure that we're keeping these sessions as useful as possible for you all. There's also an opportunity there to send us any questions that you may have thought of. We will be, as mentioned a couple of times, we will be sending a follow-up email with a link to the recording of today's session. Feel free to share that with any of your colleagues who may have been unable to make it to the session today, or if you just want to review any of the content that we covered. We also hope in the next day or so to send out the CPD certificates. We're still waiting on FPA accreditation for the session today. We're sure we're going to get that, but... if it should come in the next week or so at least. So hopefully you can be patient for that one. We thank you for your patience for that one. It has been a busy year. If this is your first premium webinar, then we encourage you to check our website where you can find some recordings of previous webinars that we've held during the year. We've had around 17 webinars this year, many of which have attracted CPD points, and we have plans for plenty more in the next year. So keep an eye on our website. Keep an eye on the newsletters that we send out. And register for the newsletter if you're not receiving it, and keep an eye on our emails also. Thanks again, Martin. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you. And really appreciate everybody's attendance.
Yeah, so thanks for supporting our webinar program during the course of the year. It's been fun. We've really enjoyed it. We wish you all a safe and happy holiday period as well, and would like to sign off. Bye for now.
Thanks, David. Thanks, everyone.